Welcome to another episode of the CTO to CTO podcast. Rocket Chat is not an open source Slack, but much more than that. Today, we speak to Gabriel Engel, its founder and CEO. With companies such as Audi, Deutsche Bahn, and the US Department of Defense using this communication platform of the future, there's no doubt the company's vision is strong. Join this conversation to find out Gabriel's view on redefining communication and why building a truly open source product is both the most impactful approach when helping nonprofit organizations around the globe, but also really good for business. Tune in.
Today, my guest is Gabriel Engel, founder of Rocket Chat. I can't wait to talk about the unique features and business model of Rocket Chat. Hello, Gabriel. Thank you for accepting my invitation.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here.
How is the weather in Brazil?
Very sunny today, but rather windy. It's quite windy outside.
Awesome. We had the first snow actually here in Wrocław, Poland. So perfect context for our discussion. We'll be discussing commercial versus open source, Slack versus Rocket Chat, and all the other topics. So maybe we're going to start with a short explanation what actually Rocket Chat is all about.
So yeah, Rocket Chat is, we call it the ultimate communication platform. So it's an open source project that allows you out of the box to have all the features from Slack or Microsoft Teams, your private channels, public channels. But also it incorporates all the features from omnichannel and call center solutions. So then you can connect it to your website, a live chat widget. You can connect to Facebook page or WhatsApp, official profile. Yeah. And also for the fact that it's open source, rather than having to run on our cloud, you can run on a managed environment. So a lot of people run on their own private deployments on Amazon or DigitalOcean or in anywhere you want, really, or even on-prem. So it gives you total and full control and ownership of your data and your conversations.
Gotcha. That's interesting. So the variety of use cases I can, as a developer or enterprise, use Rocket Chat for is very wide. We're going to get into this in a second. I have a few questions about the unique selling proposition and SDKs and other features. But I'm wondering how you founded the company. What was the founder story?
So we started because a few customers of ours wanted to have a way for their sales team to talk to the people who are visiting the website. I was running another company that they had a CRM. And we were users.
Kind of live chat or intercom?
Yeah, exactly. Our benchmark at the time was Zopping, that later became Zendesk Chat.
Yeah.
But what we missed when we were going to build a tool for them and we wanted to have it deeply integrated into the CRM, we wanted to make it open source so more people could then customize. But what we missed when analyzing the competition was really, okay, this is a good tool to talk to my customer, but if I need to talk to my colleague, then I have to jump in a different tool.
Yeah.
And then sometimes the conversation gets broken. And because we were using Slack at the point and we were users of HipChat before, we decided let's make the backend rather than look as much as those tools that you just talk to customer, let's make it look like a tool that I talk to my colleagues for people inside the organization. So was really wanting to keep collaboration and customer service and support on the same tool that drove us to try want to design a product like this.
Gotcha. So the idea was to support actually those, let's say, external use cases where they're communicating with the clients the same way they used to work with the colleagues within the same processes, maybe even the same integrations, right?
Because the ability to build the same bots. Maybe you have a bot that will help some internal process, and then the same guy that developed this bot, maybe they have will use the same framework, SDKs, and wants to develop a different bot to talk to the customer. So, or maybe there is a process that starts with the customers, and then I have to bring someone internal from the organization. And sometimes might not be the support team, might be someone from the legal or billing or, you know. And then we start thinking about when you think about email, everybody, you might receive an email from a customer, but then you can just add anyone to this conversation from your organization because everybody has email, right? We don't have these boundaries that some people will be able to talk to some people. So we wanted to replicate that feeling and that freedom of who participate to what conversation that you have an email on the enterprise communication level, on the chat level.
That's awesome. I guess it's shortening the communication paths and actually the time needed for process the topics, the cases you have with clients a lot, right? Because you have everybody on the topic. You don't have to forward mails back and forth. You can just discuss it and close the case.
Yeah, you can just include anywhere to a conversation for customer. I can if I have something rather than me having to copy and pass it on to the technical team, I can just include the technical guy to the conversation, right? If after I did the triage and understood a little bit about the problem, I can just say, okay, I know who I need to add to this conversation and just add your developer. Or you want to escalate from someone from the billing department, you just add that person to the conversation, you know? So it gives you a lot more freedom. And then people, sometimes I think people grow to now expect those walls between areas of the organization or systems that they use, which are single purpose. Then when you talk about having everybody in the same, you're like, wow, I didn't even thought that that was possible anymore. And then you have to make them think about email. I think, well, can't you do this with email? Yeah, I can with email, but for some reason we forgot that we used to have that freedom.
Now I got what does it mean this ultimate in your claim, like the ultimate communication channel.
We looked for so long, like what would be the right adjective to put there, right? And we found like ultimate is how do we get the best of all the products out there and build the ultimate one. So that's where the ultimate comes from.
How you started the company? Was it just you or have you have some founder teams?
So I think the story goes, I had another company that I mentioned. It was the CRM building company. It still exists. That's called Connecti. And then this project was started to grow inside that organization. At one point, it got a life. When we made it open source, it got a life of its own. It really it kind of blew up our expectations of how many people be interested in this project and in the concept. And immediately, we had to spin off into a different company. So we made the project open source in 2015. It was like late May 2015. Then we started to receive so much attention and started to divide, started to split the team to put more effort into it. And then eventually we started to be approached by investors that started to really like what we were building. And then in 2017, kind of like very end of 2016, we received an offer from NEA, New Enterprise Associates, to give us a seed money to spin off the company and actually incorporate as a different business. So RocketChat was incorporated in late 2016, like very late 2016.
Gotcha. And then you switch over to fully focus on it, right? On this project.
Yeah. Then it was very clear my point of view that I could not run the two things at the same time. So one, I had to look for a new team for the other company, a new CEO, so the other company had to be completely restructured. And then I became fully dedicated to RocketChat.
I recorded recently an interview with founder of Content Stack. It's not yet published, but it was very interesting conversation about the spin-off they made working on the product. So pretty similar story. So you founded the company. It's growing rapidly. You tell us about the some of the use cases. like CRM-like use cases, intercom use cases. You have really great API. Preparing to this call, I dug into it. It's very easy to use, very well documented. So I guess that developers are in your target, absolutely. Like making it easy to.
We are very much a product-led growth company, and developers come first. And there's a community of developers building the product, right? So that's how it works.
Absolutely. I think that even guys outside of the open source community you have on GitHub, that different story is also growing a lot, like maybe close to 30K stars is growing. I'm not sure what is the number today, but it's growing at such a rapid pace. But I guess that developers on the enterprise side, the user side, are using just the APIs to build the connectors and other apps. And actually, my question is, what are the most interesting cases you heard of built on top of your APIs, other than those intercom and CRM cases?
If you talk just about APIs, but they use some of the UI components as well. Sometimes the use case is how they tune RocketChat or change it slightly for a specific industry. For instance, there is one that is really cool that they built RocketChat. That was in UK. They built a RocketChat version that was for tutoring of children. They didn't have enough money to pay for tutors. If they're not doing so well at school in their studies, they could join this websites, put their profile, and they will be added to channels with teachers, which were volunteers to help children in need of help with their homeworks and assignments. So they use the APIs to automatically create this pairing, like you get a profile, what you need, and then you put those two people in the same room together. They were very keen in having full, for instance, why did they not do this on Zoom or like, I don't know, any other tool? Because it's much more like text-based. There's pictures. They take a picture of their homework. Then the teacher goes there.
Gotcha.
But they said, because you're talking about kids, they need to be able to have a complete auditing trail and auditing tools of all the conversations from teachers and students, right? They needed to have full privacy from the external world about the data of the kids that are being there. So it was one of those scenarios where you see I never thought about it, but then RocketChat was this perfect tool for it. And we have one that also I liked a lot in Africa. And those are the projects that we don't make any money out of, but if you get that warm feeling that you were able to make it happen in some way, like that you provided the technology for something cool to and amazing to happen. And we had this a project in Africa where there was a nonprofit that was trying to foster entrepreneurship in a lot of countries in Africa. And they said entrepreneurs work a lot better when they are together, when they share experience, when they can help each other out. And because of the infrastructure there, it was very hard to get a good chatting tools or projects. So they decided that they could run local servers in RocketChat on those villages or on those places where they're trying to get entrepreneurs or people who are trying to start a business together. And then they could use those servers to have a proper and deep conversations about the topics that they liked. And they
you mean they created local hubs like extranet kind of setup, right?
Yeah, and it was so cool because before they got the grant to actually do this, they first run an experiment in five cities where they run the project without the communication tool, and in other five cities where they actually put the servers to get those people to communicate. And they ran this project for almost a year first. The first year was this testing. And then they found a statistically significant difference on the outcome and on the success of those companies where the entrepreneurs had this place to communicate and share experience and help each other out. So that's where then they got the grant to run more servers across across Africa.
Gotcha. Better communication made the difference.
Yeah, the fact that you were able to create like channels and communities, and the guys were like really helping each other out, made the difference. So then they got a grant to run in large scale in more countries in Africa.
That's amazing. And also those cases you just pointed out probably wouldn't happen without the open source version of RocketChat.
Yeah, all those are on the open source version, right? Like they were able to deploy on servers that they wanted because they needed the control, they need to customize the UI and the experience to fit those specific use cases. And usually those nonprofits don't have much money to apply. So we didn't make money out of it. We just got this amazing warm feeling of helping out in those really good causes.
I think that this causes themselves are, you know, worth having open source edition, but I guess it wasn't the only reason open source is important for your project. What are the other reasons?
So, yeah, there are so many. Like now open source became so much our DNA that is almost impossible to think RocketChat as not an open source company, because we became more than just open sourcing the code. We open sourced our handbook, our process, we try to open source everything that we can think of. Like the default on the company is to make things in the public and then only think if there is a reason. And that's not just to the external public, but sometimes you're talking about like the leaders and the rest of the team. Everything is the open is the default. But if you're talking about open source itself, like for me, the very first is even on our vision of the product was I didn't have the full vision when I started, and the community played a big role in showing to us what was actually possible with RocketChat. What targets or markets we can actually serve with the technology that we're building. We, for instance, I never heard about bots. Like, I was totally new to the concept of having bots interacting with people in those chat environments in the way we end up having now. And that was something that the community brought up, this requirement and this need and this vision that this was going to be something important. And it started to show us that we needed to invest on that. So we never understood fully like this whole federation, how the federation component was important until we started to see the community wanting to integrate different RocketChat servers and ask us to build those bridges into different servers so they could share channels between multiple organizations. So the community gave us this engine for understanding where the market is going, how we need to position ourselves, is the engine for innovation, for trying out different things and see if they work or not. They're very good in giving us feedback. They're very, both when we get it wrong, right? When we get it wrong as well, obviously. Innovation, direction, vision, finding, feedback, security level as well. We receive a lot of fixes and improvements from even the U.S. Department of Defense did a lot of pull requests, fixing and changing the security side of RocketChat because they were using it inside of the DOG. DOD. So that level, your community helps you to build the product, and then you have so many other like large organizations that help us build important components of RocketChat. Deutsche Bahn, and I hope I'm saying this right, because not the bank, but the railway and transportation system in Germany, because they're using RocketChat, they built a lot of the structure for the threads, discussions, how you break the conversation into smaller subject units, because they wanted to be able to run some AI to analyze topics and discussions and conclusions to build a knowledge base. And when you have a channel that never ends, like it's only a continuous conversation for years, it's really hard for the AI to make sense of what is there. Like, what was the topic? Who mentioned it? So they helped us to build this distinction. They also help to build a universal search using solar and other systems. So there's a lot of contributions from not just individuals, but large organizations that are using RocketChat.
Wow, that was amazing answer. I didn't expect the community is so engaged into the process. That's really cool. And I think that by having this really huge community and all the different actors, enterprises, even governments, as you said, it's like you are building the industry standard more than just a product, which is absolutely awesome.
Yes, and that's our vision, right? I think we're having a vision discussion. We always discuss the vision again and again, and like to make sure that it's always up to date and we are living to our standards. And the more and more discuss, we say like we are building a company that needs to be a category defining product, right? We don't want to be put in a box and say, oh, are you the open source version of Slack? And I think this is a too narrow definition. And then it's like, no. We want to redefine what open communication means.
I'm glad I didn't ask this question, you know. I had it on my list.
We're redefining what you mean. We're not just being Slack, open source version of Slack. No, we're redefining what communicating means. We want to bring back the concepts from email, the federation, the openness. We want to bring concepts from blockchain, having a distributed ledger of messages that can be trusted and verified and signed. I want to build components from bots and process automation, having buttons and interactive components on the messaging and on the channels that people can feel that they can use beyond just tech. So it is really trying to define communication as we think it should exist in the world, rather than just trying to copy someone else's and build an open source version of something.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. But wait a minute, it sounds too good to me. Like, I mean, just to get the context. Yesterday, I had a pre-call preparing for another interview with one folk from Red Hat, and we were discussing DevOps things. And we were discussing Docker. Like, you know, Docker started the containers to popularize this idea of containerization. But actually right now Kubernetes is a standard, and like saying nobody is using Docker would be not to the point, because a lot of people are still using it, but it's not a standard anymore. Like it got broader, so they introduce new standard, but as a product is not that successful. Yeah. And my question is, how you avoid this situation with RocketChat? What's your business model? Because being very popular open source is one thing, but being successful product is totally different thing.
Absolutely. And then we experienced that ourselves firsthand as well. Like we invested so much on the product for many years. So like we got the funding, let's say 2017 was the first year that we really started building the company. So 2017 and 2018 were years that we were just investing on the product and making very little money out of it. And then we realized, okay, this is going to be a recipe for disaster if we don't start taking care of the enterprise side of the company. We spent 2018 like trying to build an enterprise version that we have like much more features for auditing tools, engagement dashboards, better scalability, and so on. And then on 2019 is when we start building a sales team. But I think there's no, I can tell what is our recipe to avoid that. But I think each company, each project might have to find obviously their own. Yeah. In our case was we had to create a department or a team in the company, which was really focused on understanding what the large and customers wanted out of communication. What were their pain points? So we could build a version of RocketChat, like an extension to the core product that would then fulfill those needs and something that could be sellable. And also on the long term, we started to think, how can we build a whole ecosystem that is economically viable, healthy? And then we went for the marketplace and thought there's a lot of value that can be created by managing a big marketplace for all those servers. That servers that even if they don't pay, even if they're using the free version, the mini version, they might want to buy a plugin or an extension from another developer that maybe we did not develop. Or if we can concentrate everything and run a really cool marketplace for all those things, where we process payment, we process the distribution, and we do the certification, then we can charge a fee for it and then build a revenue stream that the community sees value, that the users of the free version see value, and then we can build on top. So that's our long-term plan. It's really being able to make the community make money, or Rocket Chat, building the infrastructure for this marketplace, for the distribution, for all the, even for job, there's a lot of job boards or job sites that you have a tag Rocket Chat as a technology that people have to know to get the position. And I think maybe we can even have a list of suppliers and freelancers then working customizing Rocket Chat. I think we can build a lot of those external and supporting components to the ecosystem that goes beyond just the technology that will just benefit everybody.
So the marketplace is a long-term game, I guess. The ultimate business model. It makes a lot of sense because, you know, it's very popular open source. Everybody can use it. If you like to add some additional services, you can pay for it, and you Rocket Chat is getting some commissions on top of that. It makes perfect sense. So App Store model kind of, but you also have pricing for hosted versions. And even if you have it on premise, you can also buy your commercial license, right?
Yes, that's correct. And that's what I mentioned about this enterprise version that has auditing tools, the engagement monitoring tools, better integration into like Active Directory and LDAP.
Support,
and
probably.
Obviously, then support, SLAs regarding time resolution, training. And then we added all this into those enterprise solutions.
I'm just curious how many percent of your users are on open source versus paid or versus cloud? Do you have any numbers on mind?
It is, I see, in proportion. We have about, I think it's reaching to the 600 paying companies, organizations.
Oh, amazing. Right? No, that's really nice.
Yeah. That's a couple hundred thousand end users. But we have then a little bit over 15 million registered users on the open source, on the open source servers that we know of. So
it's still now the first number is very, very small.
but I think it's every open source project, right? The proportion of people using the free versus the pay, it's massive. So one thing that I've heard from an open source guy that I trust a lot was always, on open source, you need to make peace of the fact that you're going to create a lot more value than you capture back. At least that you capture back monetarily, as money. Yeah. And as long as you are the kind of person that is not just driven by the money, but you also like the fact that you're creating that all this value to the world. And like I said, having those nonprofits in Africa helping people, having all students in UK being helped, and universities in Cuba. And if you still, that makes you, is one of the ways you want to be rewarded by your work, then I think open source, it's for you, right? Because you're helping so much more people than you could. But the fact is, open source also allows you to create that much more value. I think that's the part that people sometimes forget, and they get anxious or worried that, oh, there's all these people using my product for free and they're not paying anything, we're losing money. And then you can think like, no, they would not be using your product on the first place if you wasn't.
Absolutely, yes.
So it's almost like you're claiming a money that would not some money that you would not be making in the first place, because they're just gonna would be using your competitor or another open source version, and they would be talking about this other open source version and be helping this other open source version to grow. So
Or not using it at all.
Yeah.
So it's also the story about enabling people, right?
Yes.
I absolutely agree with you. You're like, if the folks are not paying you, they probably are out of your target group anyway.
You have to focus on your ideal customer profile and understand that all the others, it's a plus that you're helping so many people that are not your customer profile.
I ever often hear something like, our biggest competition is our open source version, you know? And I think that if you think about it for a while, it doesn't make that much sense, because it's exactly as you said, it's not your competition, because the folks wouldn't use this product or paid product, or even they won't have any other alternative. So they're not your target group. So you're not competing for those people. You are enabling those folks, right?
Yeah.
It's a different story.
Totally. It does happen sometimes there. We have companies on our target audience market that are just using the community version.
Yeah.
Because they say, okay, this is good enough for us. And then we sometimes think, okay, how we can make then the enterprise version better for that specific customer profile that they will feel compelled to upgrade. But but sometimes we realize, okay, but they were not going to be our customers in the first place if the community edition didn't lure them to use the product, didn't show them the value of the product in the first place. Because sometimes it's a sole developer, you have this hero inside the organization that he wanna be cool and bring some tool with like no cost and show, look guys, we can be using this code 3. And then they start to like, they start to see value, and then maybe the opportunity is right for you to engage on a customer success point of view, make them love the product even more and show what else you can do for them for a price. But even though you look at now, rather than looking into our community version as a competitor, let's say, like you put it, as some people inside the company, especially the salespeople, sometimes tend to say that, we change the focus and say, like, look, you need to look at the open source as your lead generation tool, as your product growth is the freemium.
It's your marketing.
And your distribution. And we just need to know, we need to help them understand those customers and help us build the enterprise version that much better. And then those guys will feel compelled to upgrade and then be able to migrate to the paid version. But it's definitely not a competition. Yeah. It's a continuum. It's a path on a...
It's on good you are saying that, because my next question is actually about the converting the customers. What works better for you guys commercially? Like upselling to those who are using open source or rather acquiring the new users? I think that this is really interesting question for all the folks engaging to open source. What is worth investing into more? Upselling to open source user base or acquiring just the new users? Because the open source folks are not in your target anyway.
In our case, we was much more efficient selling to the open source users. It was a much easier sell. And it's still a big source of our sales is the upsell to the open source users. And it requires you, it makes you understand your customer more. And it makes you understand also that you're not talking about all your open source users. Then you have to do like your deal customer profile and then find out from all your open source users who fit your model and who you can then deal this extra value on the commercial version, then you can present to them. But it's a much better,
Gabriel,
much easier.
I'm going to repeat what you just said for all the VCs that are listening to us and figuring out if or not to invest into open source. Gabriel just said that for them, open source is the best marketing channel they could find, because the upselling to those users works much, much more efficient than acquiring the new user. So this is the ultimate answer if it's worth doing open source.
Most definitely. Like, and you get, if I get a list of our top 10 paying customers, they are all open source users. And you're talking about the big guys, right? You're talking
about amazing.
Guys like the U.S. Navy, you know, in the Department of Defense. You're talking about big banks like Credit Suisse. So they were all users of the open source before they start paying us anything. So we made the big chunk of our revenue comes from the open source users that were turning to commercial.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Gabriel, you said open source somehow formed the way you work on the product, like insights, feedback, communication, because they are, you know, dispersed worldwide, the contributors and the users. How did it change the way you build your company? On the pre-call, you said something, you wanted always to build international company, not a local leader, but international company from the ground up.
Yes.
How did it look like? Yeah.
And it actually kind of shaped the whole dynamic of the company. Being open source from the beginning, it meant that the hiring process was also using the community to hire, because we thought, like, who are the people who already love the product, who are building, writing the best pull requests? How are, like, and then you say, okay, the guy already loves the product. He already knows he's engaging with you. All right, it's the best person for you to hire for your team, right? So we started to hire people all over the world based on the community.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And then, so the first hires, when soon as after we got the funding, were like from Canada, US. And Rocket Chat was the tool that we were using to communicate. So more and more, we have to shape Rocket Chat to enable remote work and distributed teams. And we were like literally eating our own dog food, you know, like this term dog fooding. We were doing it very much like using our tool to work remote, work distributed, hiring from all over. And then it kind of made the shaped the company into the way it is now. Now we are 70 Rocketeers, but we are distributed in 18 countries currently. So it's a big, like, it's a few people per country sometimes. Obviously, we do have an office in Brazil, so we call the headquarters, the development and research is here in Porto Alegre, where we have maybe like half the people are from around this area. They don't come to the office all the time. A lot of people come to the office sometimes once a week or once every 2 weeks. But we build an office that we even have a apartment, a two-bedroom apartment in the office, so people can then come and stay for the night, and then we can like do a barbecue and can discuss things together. And, and it becomes more like a meeting point than just an office.
It was COVID-19 resilient before COVID-19,
Yeah, so we were it didn't change anything for us. Like working from the next day saying, guys, let's not come to the office today. It was just, okay, just that's a regular thing.
You are just preparing for it from 2000.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so that's perfect story. I like this story because, you started in Brazil, and Brazil is a huge market. It's really huge. So I think that in markets like Brazil, it's also a little bit story about the Poland, 40 million people here. So it's pretty easy to be okay with your local growth on those markets.
Very much. And that's a flag that I like to always wave into when I talk to other founders and other people here in Brazil, and say, guys, why are you doing this for the local market when there is no reason you cannot do if the same effort or just a little bit more effort, do something international. And then you see countries like Israel, where there's so many big tech companies coming out of Israel because they don't have
other
this luxury.
End of the spectrum.
Yeah,
other
they don't have this. They don't have this luxury. They need to build something that is international, or it's not going to be a big company or big product at all. So I always raise this because my and why I do this is because I think if you take this mindset of building something international and global from day one, that's gonna make you take some decisions and structure some things in a certain way. That if you do this early, it's easier than if you develop a company and the habits and the language and the documentation and everything. Yeah. And then you decide, okay, yeah, now I'm going to go international. And then you have to completely restructure something that was already running, right? And then you have to, it's sometimes it's a lot easier to start on the right direction from the beginning. It's a little bit, and then you find out that the little bit overhead that you have to build an international company actually pays back very soon, because it puts you to compete into the international arena, and then you put the bar higher for the people you are hiring. You put the bar higher for the quality of your product, because you're not just winning by proximity, right? You're winning because you want to have a better product. You put the bar high. You raise the bar for everything in your organization when you aim global. And then the compounding effect of all those decisions of making a global organization have a massive impact on the outcome in a couple of years together.
That makes perfect sense. What I also saw when we were starting up ViewStore from open source in the early days, it was also thought of global company from the day zero, is that if you are building it globally, it's much easier to get the early adopters, because if you are growing just one single market, you need to think vertically. Like you have those early adopters, which is limited to some percentage of the users. Then you have majority with totally different expectations. Like let's say it loudly, they have totally different expectations. So if you are targeting to early adopters, you can probably find good numbers of early adopters in each country, each market, then you can easier get into this late majority and so on. So I think this is also game worth playing, right?
Yes.
To find the first users.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. And that's what happened with us as well.
Absolutely. Brazil is huge market. What other tech startups we should follow from your company?
from Brazil? Let me think. And that's the big tech startups in Brazil. Vitex, it's a massive, it's becoming huge.
Yeah.
I found it amazing that on their last, before lockdown, in their last event, mm-hmm. that had the keynote speaker was Barack Obama.
Really?
Yeah. So I think they made a statement about how big they were when they managed to get Barack Obama to the opening keynote for their event, right? Because that's the kind of guy that is not just money that will bring him to talk. He really needs to align with the company values, what he's going to be talking to. I know the founders, so I was talking to him, like what took him to, he didn't disclose the amount, although you know that it's like seven figures, sort of thing, like six to seven figures. Yeah. But he said like, it was much more complicated for him to, he needs to know what kind of brand he's attaching his name to. So he did a whole team investigating like what is the value, what the company stands for, what is the vision, what is the guy trying to do, and then he agrees, then he'll participate. So Vitex, e-commerce solution, they are grow international big time. They already became a unicorn, but it's one of the companies I think it's a very global impact in the world. From Brazil, on the software space. The others, some of the unicorns we have, which are massive companies, it's like look, fintechs, which are very focused on the Brazil market. But then they became unicorns. There is about like from all the Brazilian unicorns, I think three of them are banks, digital banks. Mm-hmm. The other ones are like retailers or kind of Uber like for food or for services. So on the software space, there's not many of us yet that go international, and that's why I try to talk to other founders and say, come on guys, let's build more international software companies that we have so much to offer. But it's
absolutely. So you are pioneering, setting the stage for other startups.
Yeah,
it's possible.
Yeah, there is one company that I think they're not raising funds yet or anything. I'm proud. I'll tell you the story in a sec because I'm proud of the impact that I had in this company. That they had a closers product. There was a very very stable. The name of the company is called Total Cross. And they had a multi-platform compiler that would allow you to build once and then deploy into all the kind of like devices, including IoT. But it was closers and it was very limited market. And they started to lose momentum because you started to have Flutter and starting to have all this new language.
React Native.
Yeah. And then I told them, guys, why don't you open source? You have an amazing product. You're missing the boat. And I got them to talk to Mad Dog. I took them to Brussels for the FOSS, right? And then they said, like, okay, we'll do it. They open source everything. They were afraid of losing their customers. They were so afraid of everything. But they said, like, well, the company is starting to lose momentum, starting to lose market share. We either do it. We either die slowly or we try something new, right? Like we don't have any options.
Nothing to lose.
And sometimes that's when you take your bold decisions, your bold bets. And they said it's paying off incredibly. They are so happy with the choice. They said that they didn't lose a single customer to the free version. Their customers, they realized how complex the thing was. They said that the quality of the inquiries from the other developers improved a lot, because a lot of developers sometimes they look at the code and find out what they needed to do or how the system worked. So they didn't bother them with simple questions or sometimes they help them to improve an API or to improve something. They realize how complex the system is. So they actually got a lot of respect from some customers that they didn't know how complicated the language and all this stuff was well structured. And they starting to get new customers. They said like it was a new breath of energy into the project, and they were so proud. So maybe this goes to the people listening here that even companies who are not open source yet, is never too late. It's never too late to go open source. And if you wanna, if anyone wants to talk to them, if you wanna interview them, I'll put you guys in contact, because they can have a different story than mine. That was open source from the
one. Absolutely. I must ask you for introduction after the recording.
Ooh,
absolutely.
Awesome. Yes. Okay. And they are one company that I would say to watch out for, because I think now that they are doing this open source approach, they started to grow, and they will be expediting a lot more. Because one of the things they have is a much faster and cleaner. And so they are trying to go for the IoT devices and do this universal compiler for all the IoT devices because of how fast it is and very slim. So
I must take a closer look on that. Okay, Gabriel, we are heading towards the end of our discussion. So the last question I must ask you is this Slug acquisition by Salesforce. It's news from yesterday, I guess.
Yeah, very
recent. What do you think about this? Yeah, what do you think about the situation?
I'm very positive. I'm maybe always optimistic about most things. So, but the way I look, and we already started to hear from other companies who got worried. I think both from a product roadmap perspective from a data ownership perspective and having then Salesforce dictating or influencing the roadmap and integrating more and more of the Salesforce ecosystem. Because I think it's quite clear from the Salesforce perspective what they're trying to do, right? They were the same way as Microsoft is getting like one very a tool, Microsoft Teams, to be have the best integration with their suite of applications. Salesforce wanted to have a tool that is the best integration of their suite of applications and all the Salesforce ecosystem. So I think from the Salesforce ecosystem is a very positive news for them. But for all the rest of us, all the rest of people using it, it's like, well, okay, maybe they lost a lot of their being the independent, the universal integrated, and all this stuff. So, and I think there is a lot, another sense which happens when GitHub was acquired by Microsoft, and a lot of people that think, okay, started to migrate into GitLab and start to migrate to other tools. Although Microsoft, surprisingly, kept GitHub pretty independent. Like it's still so far to be seen any major change on the roadmap and stuff that would make them more Microsoft. I think Microsoft has
I think that they are playing, you know, the bigger game. I think Azure is the ultimate goal, like to make it the ultimate development platform. But for Salesforce, it's a different story, I guess. They are just, like, I think that they integrate and try to make more money out of it. And I think that this can work for you guys very, very well. Like,
We're very excited with the news. One, for the price they paid, it showed how much companies in our segment
are creating value.
We're like, okay, that's I think we should be able to build the same kind of like a revenue stream and user base with our distributed ecosystem. Yeah. And so first was very good in that sense, and the fact that we become more and more of the independent player, the one that gives you all access and forever ownership of your data. A lot of people might be thinking, wow, look what happens when you put all your data in someone else's network, and you never know who will end up owning it. And with Rocket Chat, you know who owns it. It's you. So you don't have that that worry ever. We're very excited about this new in many ways.
Makes perfect sense. Maybe last question. What are the future plans for you and for Rocket Chat?
We were even this discussion, and I had a post here saying that what we want to build is in one phrase. It's, and we are, I think we are building, like none of all these things already exist. We just want them to take them to this universal availability. But to build this communication 2.0 for the internet that is powered by a network of distributed servers that incorporate all the best user experience technology APIs out there for building apps, and also extended served by a big marketplace and a thriving ecosystem of developers, apps, hosting companies. Mm-hmm. This is what Rocket Chat needs to be. We need to gain back control of the way the world communicates, the same way as we had with email, with this open, distributed, new, modern platform. So that's the future of Rocket Chat.
Sounds great. Thumbs up for it. Fingers crossed. And good luck. That was great talking to you, Gabriel. Thanks for your time.
Likewise.
I'm really excited about the future, about all those things happening around the Rocket Chat. That was really amazing having you here.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a very, very good conversation. And let's do a catch up in a few minutes, and then we can update you on how things are going. And let's keep the
absolutely.
I love the conversation. We can do this anytime you want.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the CTO to CTO podcast. If you enjoyed this show and if you found this episode useful and informative in any way, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This can help us tremendously in reaching other listeners who might also be interested in these topics. And of course, as always, we'll be back with great content next week.